Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
It's already Wednesday here on Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and with me as well, someone who's never tested positive from eating Mexican food. That would be Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, since it is Wednesday, the blog did go up this morning, so swing on over there, check out what happened. You never know, you might find something you like in it there. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, Dan and I would greatly appreciate it. I don't think either of us understand why Mr. Fantasy doesn't. He's just one of those guys. But Dan and I do appreciate you liking that. Of course, don't forget the Twitter feed, which, come on, we all know this by now. It's at Sports Time Radio. You can find Dan and I on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at
Dan the Man with three.
So, you know, Dan, while I was kind of cruising through stuff this morning and I was writing, you know, about the Alex Cobb signing, being that he was the last guy off of, basically the last guy signed, the comparison I saw a couple writers make was Ubaldo Jimenez. All right. Now, Dan, Jimenez spent 4 years with the Orioles. His ERAs over those 4 years were 4.81, 4.11, 5.44, and 6.81 last year. Is this really the kind of numbers we want to see a guy we just threw $57 million at put up?
No, not at all. I mean, that's what I was trying to figure out. He got roughly a $10 million raise per year for 4 years to, I don't know, be a middle to low end of the road pitcher. And it's guaranteed. I think they were, this contract was a desperation move, and they fell for it.
Well, you know, and Dan, if it does make you feel better, both of the articles I saw on him did say he was a nice guy. So, yeah, I, you know, when, because I was thinking, because I remember him, and as you know, that 1 year, I think he won, I got to double check it here, but I believe it was 19 games with the Rockies. God, that was back in 2010. Holy cow, I didn't realize it was that long ago. You know, and he did pick up double-digit wins, you know, a couple years after that. You know, he got 10 the next year, then 13 for the Indians in 2013, and then 12 with the Orioles in 2015. But by no means is he a guy I would be giving $14.25 million to for those stats. And Jimenez, I believe, is unsigned. I don't think anybody even bothered to bring him to camp. So that was more of a frightening comparison to me than anything else. You know, I was like, wait, are they trying to make a good comparison here? Because that one didn't work for me.
I guess if you look at it, and as far as inflation goes, the average is 14.5 or 14.2, whatever it was for Alex Cobb, so they're pretty much going to pay the equivalent to what they paid for Ubaldo Jimenez to be on his decline from the age 30 to 34, which we will see Alex Cobb pursue unless he somehow manages to put it all together and wins 15-plus games for the next 4 years, which I doubt, so... But again, if that's the comparison, then Baltimore's going to be stuck with a pitcher for the next four seasons. They're going to pray and hope that he gives them 12 wins
Yeah, because, you know, and you know, like the money, I understand this is how the money goes in today's game. I mean, it's not the $20 million that, you know, Cobb was insisting on at the start of free agency. And I think it's pretty much just about a tad more than the Cubs offered him in the deal, you know, they had with him. But, yeah, you know, when I started looking at those numbers, I was like, this is the going rate for basically a bad pitcher. Like, man, you know, I mean, if I get a guy who's got an ERA hanging around 5, I'm not looking to get this guy $14 million. Maybe it's just me, but yeah, I don't get that. I was frightened. I really was. Dan, no, go ahead. I want to switch topics, so go ahead and recap there before I move along, because I'm like that.
Yeah, I mean, just trying to quickly pull it up, but, you know, at 33 years old right now, he has this year, next 3 more years, you know, including this year, at $18 million with a signing bonus. We'll throw that signing bonus out. Jeff Samardzija. So for the next 3 years, he's getting $18 million, including last year. So that, you know, let's take it for 4 years. He got the five-year, $90 million deal. And, you know, while I know he's going to give you innings and strikeouts, how do you compare the two?
Yeah, well, remember that, you know, there was a lot of people who ripped the Giants for going with that on Samardzija.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, you kind of mentioned the difference right there. The one thing Samardzija gives you that you're not getting from Cobb is innings. You know, you're not going to get that out of Cobb. Cobb's not going to give you innings. You know, he has 3 career complete games and 115 career starts, and they were all very early in his career. I think they came within the first 3 years of his major league career. So you're not going to get lockdown shutout innings from him. I mean, if you get 6 out of him in a start, and I know that, again, that's the new wave of baseball starting pitchers, which I hate, but, you know, he's a 6-inning guy. I mean, that's what they're getting. And again, you know, to me, that seems like a boatload of money to be paying a 6-inning guy. But, you know, that's the going rate, and everybody does it. And, you know, even with the signing, I don't buy it as the fact that it made the Orioles a playoff contender. So... But, you know, we'll see how, you know, we'll see how it goes and how he does. And, you know, my biggest question still is, how long does it take him to get ready? You know, when do we actually see him in the rotation, you know, to and being this far behind, you know, does this first year end up being a throwaway? You know, are we going to get one of those things where he makes 25 starts and he's, you know, 7-8 with a, you know, a 4.5 ERA? That's, you know, that's a heck of a first year to start your deal off. So, but we shall see. Who knows? But all right, now, you know, Dan, we also discussed just a little bit yesterday about the Justin Turner injury and what the Dodgers could possibly do. What I kind of forgot yesterday is that they actually, and no surprise, it's the Dodgers, have a bit of a big time prospect that if they wanted to, instead of going with the, you know, the Logan Forsythe plan, you know, what do you think about them maybe plugging in Kyle Farmer and giving him a shot? Now he is a little older for a prospect. He's 27. He split his time between Double A and Triple A last year. He hit .317 with looks like 10 home runs and 56 RBIs. He did have 23 doubles. He got a real brief appearance. It's funny because he appeared in 20 games for the Dodgers last year and had 20 at bats. So I'm just wondering if maybe he pinch hit 20 times. But if he did, he hit .300, so it didn't go too badly for him. Do you think maybe it's, you know, since it would be early and it'll probably only be for a couple weeks, maybe the Dodgers take a look at this kid and give him a shot to see what they have down the road?
I think it's not possible, and I don't see why they shouldn't go that route. I mean, wasn't he also a catcher?
Yeah, I actually believe his main position is catcher, but he's played enough third base to where, you know, they actually listed. It looks like, for Tulsa last year, he caught 19 games, but he played third base 11 times. And then in Oklahoma City, he caught in 32 games, and he played third base in 18 games. Hmm. So it's while there is a few more, you know, caught games there, it does split up well. And even like with the Dodgers, when he came up in those games, he played four games at third and he caught in three games. So, you know, it's definitely a real even split, but it looks like, you know, with the exception of maybe not being a big time power guy, you know, which I know is huge in today's baseball, but I mean, you know, he hit 300 in a small sample size. You know, hey, maybe you take a look and see. I mean, that, you know, it never hurts to have that third catcher on the roster, even if he's playing somewhere else, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, and I was just trying to figure out, you know, who was on the roster and how they could maneuver it. I think that would be a great spot. I mean, I was thinking you were going to plug him in at second base and have Logan Forsythe come over to play third.
Yeah, no, apparently that's the plan now. You know, like yesterday they were talking, it looks like it's going to be Forsythe moving over to play third and then Chris Taylor coming in from the outfield to play second base. Remember, Taylor is actually a shortstop by trade. He ended up playing mostly center field for the Dodgers last year. So a move like this, you got to figure it's just kind of natural for this guy. You know, I mentioned yesterday, your guy Kiki is going to get a little work, you know, there as well, because, you know, he can play the infield along with his outfield duties. But, yeah, I really think keeping Farmer around saved them from having to do a lot of juggling like this early in the season. And, you know, I don't have any problem with Logan Forsythe, but I think we kind of know what Logan Forsythe is. Wouldn't we rather see Kyle Farmer and see what we got for, you know, what's probably going to be, you figure, a month probably at the most, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other side of it, though, too, is by keeping him down there, he, you know, can maintains his rookie status. And then with the outfield, now you really aren't log jammed. You don't have any extra guys. You got Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, and Cody Bellinger.
Yeah, you know, but it also looks, and oddly here, the depth chart I've seen looks like the Dodgers planning on carrying Trace Thompson. So their bench would actually be Austin Barnes, who would serve as the backup catcher but can play infield. And then your guy, mm-hmm. Kiki, Matt Kemp, and Trace Thompson, you know, that's a lot of outfield power there. I mean, if you keep Farmer, you could put Utley back on the bench because they plugged Utley in as the starting second baseman in this rotation. You know, you put Farmer at third, Forsythe stays at second where he's played more, and then it gives you a little more flexibility on your bench because, you know, Austin Barnes can play second as well. So now you've got some moving pieces in your infield that, you know, with the exception of Kiki, you don't really have if you go with Forsythe at third and Utley at second.
Who's their full-time catcher?
You know, I read that they were going to go with Yasmani Grandal again. I know we kind of thought that last year, and, you know, I don't want to say he lost the job, but he didn't get a ton of playing time. So, you know, we'll have to see if that's how the year starts out, but, you know, that's what I saw. So, you know, we'll have to... You know, it's kind of a wait-and-see thing until something starts out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like the idea of, you know, getting a fresh look at a new guy, but, you know, just kind of knowing the way the organization runs, we'll see him that quickly.
So, Yeah, well, you know, he is 27, so he's a little older than, you know, some of the other guys. So, you know, I don't know if maybe, you know, maybe that helps them or how they're going to, you know, they're going to look at it. But, yeah, I just, you know, when I started kind of looking into it, it just, you know, it seemed to make a lot more sense than, you know, the whole kind of shuffling around and, you know, trying to, you know, trying to fit basically a square peg into a round hole with this team. And, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, they're super talented and, you know, they've got enough issues, you know, they still got to figure out how they're going to find Matt Kemp at bats. And, you know, I guess you got to question, you know, is Chris Taylor real? You know, he had that 1 year, but that's the only thing, the only time he's done it. So there, you know, there are some questions to be answered here. So I don't know, maybe that's why they wanted to go with a veteran lineup in case Taylor kind of flames out.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant. You know, you mentioned Matt Kemp getting a bat, but if you bring Chris Taylor in from the outfield, now your starting lineup in the outfield consists of Bellinger. Oh, no, he plays first base.
Yeah, your guys go out and play first.
Yeah, I keep forgetting. So, yeah, I guess that was the wrench in my plan right there. You know, I mean, to be honest, I'd rather see Buck Farmer than Chase Utley. So I see
you know, that was
slap me with the Adrian.
Yeah, you know, kind of
gone already.
I mean, you know, the weird thing is, you know, like I like Chase Utley. You know, I think it's fantastic that he's still playing, but he's 39. We don't need to see Chase Utley on a full-time basis.
No.
You know, so it's, you know, I think it would be, you know, just the pretty much the smarter move for them to plug Farmer in and, you know, let him go for a month. And, you know, hey, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, well, you know, he's still got options. You ship him back to AAA, and, you know, then you kind of realize, well, okay, you know, it didn't work. We're going to have to go someplace else. But, yeah, I it was just kind of strange. But, you know, hey, what the hell do I know? That's why we're here talking about it instead of in the front office, right?
Well, you know, I mean, if we were in the front office, I would have known and remembered that Adrian Gonzalez was gone. And would have taken it, you know, a different route, seeing as now there's one less outfielder.
Yes, he's a Met, just so you know. Adrian Gonzalez plays for Met.
Yeah, I know.
So, but, you know, the Angels did announce, Dan, today. We were discussing this a little yesterday, too. Apparently, Shohei Ohtani will be the DH in Game 1 of the regular season. And he will start Game 3. You know, we talked a little bit about his numbers yesterday and how they, you know, let's face it, are not fantastic. But it nope. Looks like the Angels are going to stick with him at the major league level. I don't know, you like this? Or did you kind of like our idea of maybe giving him a month in the minors to kind of figure things out?
I think rather didn't go to the minors, but I was going to say he paid all that money, but they didn't have to pay as much. But I think with the fanfare behind everything that you have to start with the majors, I'm a little surprised that they would go with him starting game one with at DH, though.
Yeah, I know they have their setup of how they're going to space out his time and how they're going to work it out. But yeah, I haven't seen enough of him to really know. So we'll have to see. I just, you know, looking at his numbers, I wasn't thrilled. I think now he's hitting under 100.
What does that mean for Pujols?
He's going to play first base full time. He lost all that weight in the off season and he's going to be the full time first baseman. So hopefully he had those foot problems. So hopefully that doesn't continue. Otherwise, you know, they're going to be in for, you know, an interesting way to kind of juggle things. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You know, and I did hear somebody, you know, the one thing I kind of understood is they were mentioning how sending him to the minors might not be a good thing because it could be an even bigger culture shock than the situation he's in now, because, you know, he'll be going to, you know, much smaller towns. Do you buy that one?
No. How is that any different?
So, yeah, well, you know, like I said, he was just saying, you know, yeah, you know, instead of playing in the bigger cities, you know, he'll be in these smaller towns and he'll be more of, you know, I think the guy kind of described it as akin to like a circus sideshow, because, you know, he won't have the Mike Trouts or anybody like that to distract any of the, you know, what would you call it, you know, media attention from him. You know, it would just be him at AAA drawing every reporter.
Well, I mean, that's completely asinine, because, I mean, he's coming from Japan. So I was told that in Seattle, you know, they had to redo their press booth because of, you know, bringing in your guy, Ichiro. They had to do it in Boston because of whoever they had. I can't remember who it was. So with him coming over and the stardom that he had in Japan, it's going to continue to carry over here. And I don't know how much of a culture shock it'll be, because he was the man on his team, so he was getting all the attention already. So how does Mike Trout being there deflect anything?
Yeah, well, you know, Mike Trout is always going to get his share of the attention. You know, there's always going to be reporters who want to talk to Trout because, you know, they love Trout. You know,
yeah.
I mean, the thing I'll never forget is the fact that they tried to give him the MVP when Miggy won the Triple Crown. You know, that's just above and beyond anything that should have ever happened. So right there, you know, just the universal love is incredibly nuts. So, you know, that will draw, you know, some of the attention away from him. Because, you know, if Trout goes 4-for-4, then again, if he goes 0-for-4 and strikes out 4 times, you know, they're going to want to talk to him. You know, where, you know, at AAA, it would be him sitting next to, you know, guys like you who would be driving Uber after the season. So making 12 grand a year. Oh.
Yeah, but you're really not going to get the amount of press going down to the minor leagues. I mean, we don't have updates and all that crap with Tim Tebow going on every single day.
Well, in some cases we do, you know, depending on,
yeah,
you know, where it's not, I noticed it's not as bad this year as it was last year.
Yeah, but I mean, the reporters, the media is not going down there. You know, wherever the Angels minor league system is, you're not going to see a flood of big city reporters going down there to begin with. But while he may get more of the attention, you know, that's expected, as it is if you were Kyle Schwarber, Chris Bryant. You know, I'm sure Johan Moncada, all those other, you know, big names that were prospects. So they had to go down to the farm system, and they were most likely, you know, the only name on the team to any recognition. So they were getting all the press. So I, you know, for that writer to say that, you know, I don't mean to be rude, but it's kind of like you're just trying to get something to talk about, to write about.
Yeah. Humorously, Dan, I found an article called Controversial Roster Decisions MLB Teams Need to Make, and the very first one is actually Ohtani going to the minors. So I thought that was kind of interesting that a lot of us are on the same page. But I wanted to, you know, kind of go through a couple of these here, because some of them are pretty interesting. Some of them are just kind of like, the second one the guy has here is he believes it's time for the Giants to give Steven Dugar a shot at being the everyday center fielder. Now, you know, they did bring in Austin Jackson, you know, as a free agent. And, you know, it looked like, you know, I mean, that's the one thing Jackson can do is play defense. Are you buying this? I mean, you know, Dugar's 24. And it doesn't look, yeah, he doesn't have any major league appearances in his career. He's a career 292 minor league hitter, though. So, you know, are you ready for the Giants to make a jump like that and give this kid a job? He's hitting 250 this spring, 44 bats.
I mean, they sound like good numbers, but sadly for me, I don't know a whole lot about this kid.
Yeah, I was kind of looking here. It looks like he bounced around quite a bit last year. Must have been injured because he only played 44 games. He actually spent time in Triple A, High Class A, Rookie League, and even played in the Fall League in Arizona. So he hit 262 throughout. Not a huge power guy, but that's no big deal in San Francisco. Six bombs with 26 RBIs. Did steal 10 bases. Looks like he's got a pretty high strikeout rate, but that's what happens in baseball today. So we just have to learn to accept that. I don't know a ton about him. He is a left-handed hitter, though. Could they maybe platoon a little bit?
With Austin Jackson, I think you would want to, wouldn't you? I didn't really peg him for an everyday player anymore.
Well, you know, they do still have, remember, they have Gorky Hernandez hanging out on the roster, and they did re-sign Gregor Blanco. You know, all these guys have quite a bit of major league experience, you know, especially Blanco, who filled in quite nicely for the Diamondbacks last year when Pollock went down. He's a lefty bat as well, so, you know, I'm kind of looking to see if maybe, you know, are they going to think there's not enough room? You know, or maybe with coming off the injury plague beginning of the season, does Dugard need to start in AAA to make sure he's good to go?
I think that's more the route, but also, you know, I think you just mentioned there's too many guys.
Yeah.
So, you don't have enough four outfield spots.
Yeah, it's not softball. He is just 24. So, you know, I mean, there's nothing saying he can't start it. You know, AAA, and if he starts off hot and, you know, they don't like what Blanco or Hernandez is bringing, or even Jackson, you know, you can maybe trade the guy or just cut the guy loose and, you know, bring him up. So, you know, while it's an interesting thought, I think it definitely, you know, he starts in the minors, don't you?
Yeah, and I mean, I know Span was traded to kind of bring over whoever, but or was he trading? Was he a free agent? I'd rather have Denard Span starting center field for me than Austin Jackson on a full-time basis.
Oh, that's saying a lot. That's really saying a lot, because I know how you feel about Denard Span.
Well, he's just old, like me, but I don't hate him. But, I mean, the Cubs tried that experiment with Austin Jackson. You know, Cubs tried that experiment with Austin Jackson. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, but, I mean, the White Sox weren't in, you know, it's not like they were looking for a guy to really fill the role as so much as a guy to play the position. Which, by the way, Big Jack, I haven't bought any White Sox tickets in a while or ever. I think, well, maybe once. But that was at the box office because we just showed up. But I did get selected. I was specially selected to take a survey by them today. So I don't know if they just do that to make people Woo-hoo! Who've gotten tickets through email feel special. Like, ooh, you're getting part of a survey. But it was pretty cool that they reached out and they're reaching out to their fans and trying to see what's important to them. So I don't know why I just thought of that, but you said the White Sox, so it popped into my head. And I wanted to bring that up earlier, but, you know, then I forgot.
Yes. All right, now this is one, Dan, I understand why this is put in here, but I completely and totally disagree with it. This guy, and I forgot his name, is like Zachary Reimer or something like that, who wrote this. He says that the Milwaukee Brewers should just let go of Jesus Aguilar. Okay, now I understand they're in a tough spot. You know, the outfield is going to be Christian Yelich, Lorenzo Cain, and then Ryan Braun and Domingo Santana splitting some dime. Braun is also going to eat up some at-bats at first base with Eric Thames. You know, and then he'll also get his at-bat. Braun also gets his at-bats at DH. So that really kind of ties, you know, ties their hands with Aguilar, who's just a first baseman. But, you know, as a part-timer last year, Dan, he put up 16 homers with 52 RBIs, hit 265. You know, I think he's just too good of a player to let go. And, I mean, now, you know, I know, okay, you know, maybe you've got to get rid of him because there isn't room for him. But you just – can you afford to let a guy like that walk? I mean, don't you have to get – you know, even the minimal, like a Class A guy in return for him?
That's what I would say, because, I mean, you're looking at a guy and you described the perfect guy to come in your seventh, eighth inning spot.
Right.
You know, to take your pitcher out, especially in the National League. You need guys like that in the National League because you're going to, you know, maybe not even seventh inning anymore because we know that pitchers don't always get to the seventh inning. So, you know, on their second at bat, if it just so happens to be in the sixth inning and somehow you've got guys on base, this might be the spot, the opportunity for him to come in and drive in some runs and, you know, be it whoever's at first base that day. You know, I don't remember Thames' defense, but I know Braun isn't huge on that. So it wouldn't be a huge loss for bringing him out for the last three innings. And like you said, it's,
yeah, you know,
you can't just let the guy walk away.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Obviously, in these situations, you know, especially in the National League, I mean, they double switch all the time. You know, there's no reason, you know, no reason at all that he couldn't be your, you know, your pinch hitter double switch guy getting, you know, because you figure there's a pinch hit in just about every game. You know, he could get in a bad game. You know, and there, you know, there'll be ways to find playing time for him in the DH role. I mean, I know it won't be huge. But, you know, if you do decide to move on, and I know being that he's just a first baseman, it's difficult to find a trade partner there. But, yeah, I just, you know, letting a guy with a bat like that walk, I can't see that. So, and, you know, he's just 27. All right, now this is the one I really wanted to get to, Dan, because I think I know how you're going to feel about this, but I'm just going to kind of read you the headline and let you go. All right? Chicago Cubs, their controversial roster decision, Dan, move Jason Hayward into a platoon role.
I mean, yeah, that sounds correct if you want to lose the games that he's not in.
Even better, Dan, in this article, this guy calls him a $23 million per year albatross.
You know, again, everyone looks at his bat. And the problem, of course, is the fact that he's playing right field and he's not hitting, you know, 40 to 60 home runs every season. If he hit 30-plus home runs, he could still have a horrible batting average because – you know, nobody cares about that anymore. Oh, he hit 42 home runs. Yeah, but his batting average was .212, and he struck out 300 times. Yeah, but he hit 30 home runs.
Yeah.
You know, strikeouts don't count in my fantasy league.
Here you go, Dan. The last paragraph in the article here says, the Cubs would be better served having him share time with Ben Zobrist, Ian Happ, and even Chris Bryant in right field.
No, the whole Chris Bryant experiment is cool to get him in for 10 games just so us fantasy players can have a multi-position player. But he's not going to platoon every day out there. Yeah, he's not going to be part of a platoon out there more than a handful of times because I think Joe Maddon's finally realizing that it's stupid to put Chris Bryant there. Ian Happ needs to be playing second base or center field or full-time right field with Jason Hayward playing in center field. And having him platoon with Ben Zobrist at right, you know, now they're going to put Ben Zobrist in the cleanup spot, which, again, makes no sense whatsoever. And then you're going to have a guy who doesn't have the defensive caliber that Jason Hayward has. None of them really reach that caliber.
But it's Ben Zobrist.
So,
it's Ben Zobrist. Can't go wrong with Ben Zobrist.
No. They went wrong with that four-year deal, but whatever, that's a whole other topic. You just can't go that route. And if you do, you'll see a drop in the defense. It's guaranteed, and you'll see some games lost simply because they had the wrong guy in right field. 2 minutes, Big Jack.
Bring him in as a defensive replacement. So, all right. Well, while Dan moves along to lock up his child, we will grab the next one here because we actually already kind of talked about this a little bit. The next one is Matt Kemp belongs in a platoon role with the Dodgers. All right. Now, the Dodgers are, of course, as we know, loaded, especially in the outfield. It was a bit of a surprise when they agreed to bring Matt Kemp back in that trade with the Braves. I just wasn't quite sure what the entire thinking was there. But, Chris Taylor has really only done it for 1 year, and Jock Peterson has had his struggles. Right now it looks like the plan is for Taylor to be the everyday center fielder with Yasiel Puig in right. Nobody's going to touch Puig. And then Jock Peterson will play left. You know, maybe that's the plug-in Kemp gets as a platoon guy with Peterson. You have to kind of wonder if, this could work out. You know, Kemp is 33. But I believe he's coming off a pretty solid year in Atlanta. I got to pull his stats up here real quick. And I know at least at the start of spring training, I believe he was pretty hot. Let me go last year first. He had another kind of injury plagued Matt Kemp year, just 115 games. And he had 276 with 19 homers and 64 RBIs. Oddly, didn't steal a base. Those years of Kemp stealing bases are long gone. But in spring, he is hitting .302 for the Dodgers this spring in 43 at-bats and does have four home runs. So, the power appears to be there in spring. It's just the process of can you – is this the route you want to go? Do you want a 33-year-old Matt Kemp splitting time with, the left-handed hitting Jock Peterson? Peterson could, play some center field if needed, just kind of depending on how their setup is. And, they do provide a few. This is one of the few they put stats up for. Kemp's OPS against right-handed pitching is .794, but against left-handed pitching, it jumps up to .921. So, maybe there's, that kind of option with, Peterson as the left-handed side and Kemp as the right-handed side. It's just so tough, when you look at that Dodger outfield. I mean, we're talking about Kemp and Peterson. I mentioned Taylor and Puig. You got to figure out where Andrew Tolles fits in this because he's coming back from injury. Trace Thompson is out of minor league options. So, you either keep him on the roster or you expose him to the rest of the league, and give them the opportunity to pick him up off waivers before you can send him down. Cody Bellinger does have his spot at first base, so, you don't have to worry about, that. But, Kiki Hernandez plays the outfield. You've got a really stacked up, really loaded, way too many outfielders on this roster. And I know Kemp has had his injury issues, and I believe Peterson has been dinged up the last year. Tolles is coming off, was it a knee or a, I can't remember what he did last year, but I remember he did it really, really early in the season, and, it just cost him the rest of his year. So I'm trying to remember and see if they, it was a torn ACL that Tolles had last year. So he's done well in the spring too. He's hitting .302 with, 43 at bats, a couple homers. But that injury limited him to 31 games. It's an interesting decision, but we talked about a little bit about that earlier. Now that I hear Dan rattling around, I think he's back and I can throw the next one at him here. So are you ready for our next? Yeah, are you ready for our next controversial roster decision, Dan?
Yes, sir.
All right, the next one here is that the New York Mets should put Zach Wheeler in the bullpen. So now, you know, Wheeler is, I think he, what is he, 27 now, and he's missed, multiple seasons
all
because
prepared.
Of Tommy John. Yeah, I got to look and see. I don't remember if he actually pitched last year. Oh, yeah, he did. He made 17 starts last year, Dan. He was 3-7 with a 5.21 ERA. Before that, he hadn't pitched since 2014. So he had two and a half, basically, full years off. You know, maybe that's a better role for him. You know, he comes in, he pitches an inning and two or two, kind of like Archie Bradley now does for the Diamondbacks. And, you know, maybe a little less stress. He can, you know, just come out and try to blow guys away or, you know, but I mean, he was a vaunted, you know, part of that Mets rotation. And, you know, Jason Vargas did just break his non-throwing hand. So they probably need a starter. I don't know. What do you think you do here?
But, you know, maybe I wouldn't maybe so much categorize that as a controversial move as maybe the next move that they should be contemplating. And maybe they should have been in the running for Alex Cobb or even Jake Arrieta.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I'm looking here to see. Yeah, they don't really have a timetable on Vargas's return. He did have surgery, but again, it's his non-throwing hand. As of right now, their rotation is, you know, Noah Syndergaard, Jacob DeGrom, Matt Harvey, Zach Wheeler would be five. You know, Vargas is going to come back eventually. Do they try to do the stupid six-man thing because these guys get injured right and left? Or is it really, Dan, just a better chance by the time Vargas returns, somebody else will be hurt?
I was going to say, I don't think they'll have a six-man because, like you said, by the time he comes back, someone else will be in need of time off.
You know, and you'll be excited to know on this depth chart I'm looking at that Adrian Gonzalez is listed as the starting first baseman. So,
yay! Is David Wright still the starting third baseman, too?
No. They signed Todd Frazier.
Yeah, I know. That was just a bad joke.
But he is still listed. He's the backup. And they do – it does say here that it looks like he's going to start the season on the DL, in case you were wondering.
Well, I mean, don't you have to include him for, the next 10 years? He signed through, like
– Yeah, I think he signed for about the next 10 years. Yeah, so kind of back to Wheeler. I mean, you like this plug-in for him? You know, you think he could find success in the bullpen as a big-time setup guy?
I think he would have a better chance of continuing his career in Major League Baseball doing that.
Maybe he
wouldn't
get hurt so much.
I don't know the details of his contract. Yeah, you know, that's the other part of it.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's got to still be on his, you know, his rookie deal, right? I mean, he hasn't pitched enough. I don't even know if he's pitched enough to get into arbitration. So,
it does go by time. I did not realize it went by time served, not by, you know, technically.
Yeah, I believe it's time served. Let me, I'm going to see if I can jump on our favorite fun site here and see what they have for Wheeler, if he's listed here. Where the heck are you, Zach Wheeler? It does look like he's going to make $1.9 million this year.
So, I mean, it wouldn't hurt them to throw him in the bullpen at all. But I believe he goes back to 2012 as one of their big prospects from back that far.
Yeah, he was one of the, you know, the guys. You know, they were going to, you know, win with that rotation, you know, Syndergaard, DeGrom, Harvey, when Harvey was supposed to be the best pitcher on the team. You know, and then Motz was the first guy in the wings waiting to go, you know, but since then, You know, Motts and Harvey have been constantly injured. We haven't seen Wheeler because he's been out for 2.5 years. And then, you know, last year, both Syndergaard and DeGrom picked up injuries. So, honestly, if I'm the Mets front office, I'm looking at how we develop our pitchers to try to figure out why the hell all these guys are getting hurt. So.
All right, just show up to
you know, that and why. you know, that and why it took Wheeler 2.5 years to get back from Tommy John when most guys do it in, you know, 12 months now. You know, that would be my other question there.
Well, the burn, was it a bone spurs or?
Oh, who knows? It could have been anything with those guys. So, all right, Dan, here's the last one. And you can probably tell by the tone of my voice that I don't like it already. And I don't know how this is a roster decision. Maybe he just ran out of ideas here. He was trying to get to 7. The Seattle Mariners need to name James Paxton the opening day starter.
Man,
I don't even know if I can talk about
that is definitely the highest. That should be number one. Maybe 10 was the best for last, but that would be the most controversial one. So I guess that fitting that it's at the end of the article. But I mean, over the King. Well, then again, is he even going to be ready for opening day?
Who knows? Paxton was hurt last year. Well, everybody was hurt last year. I'm trying to remember. Has Felix been back? Has he thrown since he got hit? I mean, I'm sure he has, right? So.
Well, didn't you say he was throwing from like 150 feet or something?
So, yeah, I'm trying to see here, you know, if or what they have anything on him. But there's not a whole, you know, being that it's spring training, they don't do a lot of, you know, wonderful reporting here. He was throwing. Okay, great. Well, that's wonderful that he threw. So he threw. But, yeah, I don't know if, you know, when he threw or how he threw or if he threw what. So we'll have to kind of wait and see. But, yeah, I guess maybe that could make it easier if Felix isn't ready.
Yeah. If he's not ready, then it's not so controversial.
Yeah, right now they say it's unknown if he will get the start opening day. So it's kind of up in the air. But, you know, last year, you know, injuries, he was limited to just 16 starts. Not that Paxton made a whole bunch more. I know he was, he was pretty good in the starts he made for them last year. But, I think they only used about 30 starters or something here. Let's see if I can find Paxton. Where did they bury him in this mess of stats? Yeah, he made 24 starts last year, but like I said, he was real good. 12-5 with a 2.98 ERA when he made his starts. But yeah, they had a, what's that, 6 there? 16 already, 16, 17. They had 17 different pitchers make starts for him last year due to injury. So, not a banner year. And they already started off kind of down that road as it is, with some of the guys being hurt. Erasmo Ramirez has been out of spring training for, I don't know how long now. And, you know, they're dealing with the Felix thing. So. Well, you know, we'll have to see, but I guess maybe it would have been a little more controversial if, you know, Felix was available. You know, with him not being available, this isn't as big a story, is it? At least not to you?
No, not to me. I mean, if both these guys were 100% ready to go, then I think it's controversial, but with the King kind of in limbo still, or his status, you know, it turns in not so controversial, but a necessity.
Well, here you go, Dan. Humorously, since you brought his name up a little earlier in our conversation, I just binged some, you know, MLB news, and one of the first stories that pops up, Jeff Samardzija tagged for 2 more home runs in minor league stint. So I thought that was humorous that was the the first thing I saw there. I was kind of like, oh, okay, I think Dan just mentioned it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what happens when you throw a 98 mile an hour four-seam fastball over the top of the plate. And
Looks like he went 3 1/3 innings. He threw 73 pitches, 7 hits, 3 runs. They were all earned. He did hit a guy. No surprise here, Danny. Struck out 6 guys in a 3 1/3 inning. So, it seems like a pretty typical Samardzija outing, you know, maybe with the exception of the home runs. But, yeah, just kind of humorous that after you kind of brought his name up while we were talking about the Giants, that's one of the first headlines. I'm like, hey, there you go. So,
With spring training, I mean, well, in the regular season too, he's always going to give up at least one home run a game. But in spring training, especially a minor league stint, I would think the focus for Jeff Samardzija and maybe the pitching coach and, his placement of the ball and more focusing on, you know, getting strikes and getting the ball over the plate with his fastballs than really focusing on getting guys out, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, this close to opening day, I would have liked to see him go more than 3 1/3. But, you know, the pitch count did get up to 63. You know, it's time that they start, you know, stretching these guys out. You know, like I don't care about spring training stats. A guy could have a 10 ERA. I don't give a crap about it. As long as when, you know, the bell rings, we get started opening day, and he goes out there and he makes his first start, he's not giving up, you know, 3 runs in 3 1/3 inning. You know, that's all that matters to me. So it's just getting your work in and getting it set up. So now, you know, I know this one is going to be a tough one for you, Dan, but this was another, you know, article I caught with the headlines. And, you know, anytime you and I are doing this, when I see Cubs stuff, I always like to ask you about it. And I know you probably haven't had time yet to go over every team as we prepare for our fantasy draft. But the headline question here is, where does the Cubs lineup rank in Major League Baseball? You know, kind of off the top of your head, Dan, where do you have the Cubs ranked? And I will tell you, this guy does have them in the top 10. But where do you kind of envision them as a lineup? And then I'll after you give me a number, I'll run over his top 10 for you.
Yeah, I would. Of course, I'd love to just throw out number one, but I want to. My realistic, just off the top of my head, I'm going with 6.
Yeah, you know, you nailed that. He has them 6, which I actually think is a little low. He goes. Astros, Yankees, Nationals, Red Sox, Indians, Cubs, Dodgers, Twins, and Cardinals, or Dodgers, Twins, Cardinals, and A's are his top 10. Yeah, he's got the A's as the number 10, which is interesting because they have some young guys that, you know, like if Matt Chapman and Matt Olson come through, that's going to be a really deadly lineup. It's just there's a lot of, you know, again, that magical if word attached to it. I think 6 may be a little low for the Cubs.
Well, you know, and I was just trying to imagine where I would put them, but with that order going, it's stupid to do ties, but I think it's more of a tie at 5th.
Yeah, see, I actually like the Cubs lineup better than the Indians or the Red Sox. So, you know, there, I would have them at 4. You know, I've already got them, ahead of them. You know, and I almost a little surprised that the Yankees lineup isn't number 1. I mean, I know the Astros are the defending champions, but, you know, I think it's a pretty close race there, depending on how things kind of shake out. And like you said, a tie may not have been a bad thing there. So
no, and you know why the Yankees aren't number one.
Because everybody would complain.
No, there's an even bigger reason why they're not number one, and that's because their starting second baseman now plays for the Marlins.
Yes, damn it, jerk. So, we actually did get a surprising counter rank here. After the article came out, the at NBCS Cubs tweeted them and gave their top 10 lineups. They went with Astros, Nationals, Cubs, Yankees, Indians, Red Sox, Diamondbacks, Brewers, Cardinals, and Twins. So I guess a little controversy.
I kind of go with that one a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, I like the top. I think the Yankees do belong up towards the top, so I think four is low for them. And I don't know why this guy leaves the Dodgers out. Maybe because of the Turner injury?
Probably.
So, but yeah,
you know what I mean?
I think the Dodgers are a top 10 lineup with Justin Turner, definitely.
Yeah, well, with the Turner injury, that kind of, he's the cornerstone of the team, I would say. And you know, the way you were talking about it earlier, and the fact that I keep forgetting who's on that team and who's not on that team, there's so many damn guys that, you know, who's going to play where. You know, they're still haven't – sure, they're close to hammering it out. They're just not releasing it yet, just like any other team, unless they're, you know, flying across the world to play an opening day, you know, in next week in Australia and then going back to spring training for 7 more days.
Yeah, you know, Dan, what I got to tell you, I'm a little surprised by, because I really thought that this lineup would be in there just because of the one guy. Is where's the Angels lineup? Because doesn't Mike Trout make that list on his own by himself? What happened there?
He should. Should be Angels.
I mean, you know,
one.
You would think with the way they. You know, they kind of laud after this guy that lineup would have found its way in there somehow. So, just one of the, you know, like I said, I kind of thought of it, who they throw up where and how all the, you know, the stuff gets a little shaken out with the way it goes or how they see it, but. You know, it's definitely open-ended and all that other fun stuff. You know, it gives us a chance to look at it at least, right?
Yeah, but, you know, in all, with all the talk, it doesn't matter who's where, but I'm excited for the season two start.
All right, the music means that Dan and I are going to head out for the day, but hey, we're going to be back here tomorrow at 5:30 to do it all again. While we're gone, though, you know what to do. SportsTimeRadio.com. Get over there and look at the new blog. Link over to the Facebook page and give that a like. But don't forget the Twitter feed at SportsTimeRadio. You can find Dan and I on Twitter as well if you want to look this up. Always, big thanks for listening live. Don't forget, the podcast is available for you anytime you want to go listen to it at TuneIn.com.